This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiswu Hib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
we find that the 2017 presidential election was not conducted in accordance with the principles laid down in the Constitution and the written law on elections, in that it was neither transparent nor verifiable. On that ground alone, and on the basis of the interpretation we have given to Section 83 of the Elections Act, we have no choice but to nullify it.
That's Kenyan Justice Philomena Mwilu explaining why she voted in favor of the petition challenging incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta's election win. Details next.
Also, United Nations experts warn that elections in South Sudan next year would be catastrophic. And in addressing the United Nations General Assembly, Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi said the Arab region is a hotbed for some of the most vicious civil conflicts in recent human history.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Kenya's Supreme Court released a ruling today explaining why it nullified the August presidential election. Justices put the blame on members of the Electoral Commission, who they say refused a court order to open computer servers and who announced official results before all tally forms had been received. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig has more.
The roads around Kenya's Supreme Court were cordoned off Wednesday, and police dispersed protesters from the ruling and opposition parties who had gathered outside. Inside, justices spent more than 7 hours explaining why they ruled that results of the country's August 8th presidential election would be nullified. Justice Philomena Mwilu was one of three justices to explain why she voted in favor of the petition, filed by Raila Odinga's opposition coalition, which challenged incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta's win.
We find that the 2017 presidential election was not conducted in accordance with the principles laid down in the Constitution and the written law on elections, in that it was neither transparent nor verifiable. On that ground alone, and on the basis of the interpretation we have given to Section 83 of the Elections Act, we have no choice but to nullify it.
Mwilu said the Electoral Commission, or IEBC, refused a court order demanding it open its computer servers. As a result, she said, justices had no choice
but to accept the petitioner's claims that the IEBC's IT system was infiltrated and compromised, and the data therein interfered with, or IEBC's officials themselves interfered with the data, or simply refused to accept that it had bungled the wool transmission system and were unable to verify the data.
In Kenya's electoral system, official tally forms were to be sent from all 291 constituencies and 40,883 polling stations to the National Tallying Center. These paper forms were to back up the electronic tally that was also sent to the center. The justices took issue with the fact that the IEBC announced official results before about a quarter of these paper forms had been received. In his comments, Chief Justice David Moraga said many of the constituency-level forms were incomplete, often lacking required signatures or IEBC features.
As we have noted, that out of 291 forms, 56 from that random sample, 56 did not have the watermark features, while 31 did not bear the serial numbers, and a further 5 were not signed at all. And the 2 were only stamped by the returning officers, but not signed. In addition, 2 forms were not signed by the agents.
According to Nairobi-based writer and political analyst Nanjala Nyabola, these procedures are important because they were put in place as a direct result of other electoral crises over the years. And she says the justices understand these implications.
They're not merely technicalities, but they're things that are protected and enshrined in law. They were saying to the IEBC, you don't get to pick and choose which parts of the law you obey, because if we allow you to do that, what's to stop the next commission, the next individual, the next institution from doing the same thing?
The IEBC announced that a meeting scheduled Wednesday with Jubilee and NASA would be postponed to a later date to allow the parties to consider the court's judgment and inform discussions on preparations for fresh polls. Currently, the rerun election is scheduled for October 17th, but the opposition is pushing for a later date. The Constitution dictates the poll take place within 60 days of the Supreme Court's ruling, which would be October 31st. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
As the UN General Assembly session continues in New York, a high-level meeting was held today on the humanitarian situation in South Sudan. Among those taking part was Mark Lowcock, Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs. He said the crisis in South Sudan could spiral out of control if leaders don't find a peaceful solution to the nearly four-year-old conflict.
UN agencies and NGOs have arrested famine in the Leer and Mayandit counties of Unity State, but the conflict has caused the number of people just one step away from famine to increase from 1 million to at least 1.7 million since February. But the suffering goes far beyond hunger and malnutrition. In this conflict, civilians suffer widespread, egregious human rights violations by armed actors on all sides. Thousands of villages have been burned and looted. Rape and gang rape are systematic and widespread. Children and women are forcibly abducted into fighting forces. The country is facing its largest ever cholera outbreak. And one in three of South Sudan's schools has been destroyed, damaged, occupied, or closed, leaving the country with the lowest school enrollment in the world.
Lowcock says 4 million people are now displaced, 2 million inside South Sudan and the rest in neighboring countries.
Aid agencies are doing all they can, but the operating environment in South Sudan is increasingly hostile. South Sudan is still the most dangerous place in the world to be an aid worker. This year alone, at least 18 have been killed, taking the toll to 85 since the conflict began. Others continue to be harassed, detained, arrested, and delayed by deliberate bureaucratic impediments. Despite all this, humanitarians have helped or protected nearly 4 million people this year with food, livelihoods, water, and other essential help. Donors have been very generous. The South Sudan Humanitarian Fund has allocated nearly $600 million and the Central Emergency Response Fund over $250 million since the conflict began. But the appeal for this year faces a 35% funding gap.
That was Mark Lowcock, Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs. South Sudan's first Vice President, Taban Deng Gai, also spoke today about the crisis in his country.
South Sudan is committed to restoring peace, and in this regard, the leadership of the country, both President Salva Kiir Mayardit and myself, as partners of peace, have agreed that there is no other viable option. As leadership in South Sudan, we share a good working relationship with the overriding goal of the transitional government of national unity to bring peace in South Sudan. We have no other option but to bring peace to the country. War is not an option. The government of national unity is also committed to the IGAD high-level revitalization forum, and willing to have dialogue with opposition groups, while the transitional government of national unity is expected to extend an olive branch. The same is expected of the armed opposition groups. The TIGONO is committed to reaching to people that are interested in dialogue.
Deng Gai said that the country's dire economic situation could be one of the biggest spoilers of peace efforts. He admitted South Sudan is a dangerous place for humanitarian workers, but said the government is committed to guaranteeing access to aid agencies.
We also urge partners to consider allowing the protection of humanitarian convoys by government in areas where it is considered relatively unsafe, or in order to mitigate the incidents of deaths of aid workers and destruction of humanitarian relief. Your Excellency, we are being blamed of South Sudan being insecure country. Yes, this is true. South Sudan is insecure. But to be fair here, these agencies, in most cases, they don't allow the protection of our police or the protection of a convoy by our police or by our army. Sometimes they even refuse the protection of UNMISS.
That was South Sudan's first vice president, Taban Dengai, speaking today at the United Nations.
United Nations experts warn that elections in South Sudan next year would be catastrophic and lead to more violence in the country. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva, where a report on the humanitarian consequences of civil war has been submitted to the UN Human Rights Council.
The Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan describes the humanitarian situation of millions of South Sudanese refugees and internally displaced people as almost unmanageable. The experts who visited Ethiopia and South Sudan between September 4th and 15th report shocking scenes of desperate refugees fighting to be registered. The experts say they saw people waiting in line collapse from hunger. In South Sudan's capital, Juba, they interviewed women who had been raped by soldiers and were unable to receive justice or recompense for their suffering. The commission says officials, including President Salva Kiir, told them they wanted to hold elections next year once the transitional government comes to an end. Commission member Godfrey Musila tells VOA, "This would be disastrous because such a government would lack legitimacy."
It would not be legitimate because a third of the population is displaced. Some of them are out of the country. It cannot be legitimate because political leaders, even the opposition that are abroad, some of them have been arrested and rendered back to Juba. They are not able to access the people to campaign.
Musila says the dormant peace process must be revitalized and a ceasefire put in place before an election can even be contemplated. Members of the commission agree. A hybrid court, which was approved by the African Union in 2013, must be established swiftly to hold perpetrators of serious abuses accountable for their actions. They say the people of South Sudan also need a commission on truth and healing. South Sudan became independent from neighboring Sudan in 2011 after decades of conflict. Less than 2 years later, the new nation descended into civil war after President Salva Kiir fired his deputy Riek Machar. The ensuing conflict has raged mainly along ethnic lines, with thousands killed and about 4 million people out of a population of 12 million displaced. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi has delivered his country's address to the United Nations General Assembly. The Egyptian president said the Arab region is a hotbed for some of the most vicious civil conflicts in recent human history. He said such conflicts have made the Middle East and North Africa vulnerable to terrorism. El-Sisi said one out of every three refugees in the world today is an Arab, and the Mediterranean Sea has become a conduit for migrants from Asia and Africa. He compared African problems to the crisis in the Arab world.
This continent has also become subject to the same security threats facing the Arab region and constitutes a major example of the crisis in the current international economic order, which perpetuates poverty and economic disparity.
El-Sisi said Egypt has been at the forefront of the countries that are taken on initiating the Nile Basin Initiative. He said the agreement is a legal framework that depends on cooperation and sharing between its three parties. It also relies on the good faith of the countries involved and a guarantee that they apply the agreement fully and with integrity.
We pursued the conclusion of a trilateral agreement between Egypt, Sudan, and Ethiopia to address the Renaissance Dam issue from a cooperative perspective in a manner that establishes a clear legal framework to manage the issue in accordance with international law and established norms. And based on the well-established rules governing relations between states sharing basins of transboundary rivers all over the world.
The Egyptian president stressed that the only solution to the crisis afflicting the Arab region is through upholding the notion of the modern nation state. That concept is based on the principles of citizenship, equality, rule of law, and human rights. He said that that applies to several conflicts in the region.
With regards to Syria, we believe there would be no salvation for Syria except through a consensual political solution amongst all Syrians, at the core of which is the preserving the unity of the Syrian state. Similarly, we believe that a political settlement is the only viable solution to the crisis in Libya. Libya continues to face attempts to dismantle the state and turn it into an open field for tribal conflict, a field of operations for terrorist organizations.
President El-Sisi said the same logic applies to the Egyptian strategy regarding the crisis in Iraq and Yemen. He also made a plea to the Palestinians and Israelis to take advantage of a rare opportunity to achieve comprehensive peace. He said peace could come through a just settlement, meaning the establishment of an independent Palestinian state along the 1967 borders with East Jerusalem as its capital. If this is achieved, the Egyptian president said the entire region could move into a new phase of stability and development.
You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 22 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Kenya's Supreme Court released a ruling today explaining why it nullified the August presidential election. United Nations experts warn that elections in South Sudan next year would be catastrophic. And in addressing the United Nations General Assembly, Egyptian President Abdel Fattah El-Sisi said the Arab region is a hotbed for some of the most vicious civil conflicts in recent human history. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Well, frustration is mounting in Zimbabwe amid long lines at voter registration centers and accusations that the Electoral Commission is not ready. The High Court will hear a petition from the opposition tomorrow to suspend the process until the Electoral Commission has received the rest of the registration equipment. Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare.
Zimbabwe's capital has one registration center to serve an estimated 2 million potential voters. People told VOA they have waited as long as 5 hours before being served. To register, each person must present identification and then have his or her photo taken and fingerprints scanned.
Okay, the process actually is too long. It's so tiresome. One admission, I think it's not fair. I think they should increase the number of machines.
The center ran out of stationery Wednesday, leading to more frustration. One man in line asked to be identified only by his first name, Maxwell.
The process is painfully and stressfully slow. And it looks like I'll be here until maybe they close, because it's taking too long for them to register potential voters. I think they are being deliberately slow so as to frustrate people so that they go back home without having registered.
Voter registration opened last week on Thursday. The goal is to create the country's first biometric voter registry before the 2018 elections. Electoral Commission head Rita Makarau has rejected calls from the opposition to hold the four-month exercise.
We are ready for this exercise. Again, we are ready financially. We have the resources. Our people have been trained on how to operate the kits, and they are ready to register all Zimbabweans.
The head of the Independent Election Watchdog Election Resource Center, Tawanda Chimini, says the Election Commission, known by its acronym ZEC, must address the long queues his staff are seeing throughout the country.
Accessibility of the process has been quite limited. We definitely need to engage ZEC around how they can make more locations available for the public to access these registration centers. I think the demand is there, and ZEC must be seen to be responding to calls for more centers, because the kits to set up new centers are available. Out of the 400 kits that they have received, they've only deployed 63. So there is room for ZEC to do more around this.
The first in line to register when the exercise opened September 14 was President Robert Mugabe.
I therefore urge all eligible Zimbabweans to go to register in their numbers. Well, with these few remarks, I wish to declare the biometric voter registration in Zimbabwe officially launched, and wish the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission the best.
2 hours later, the opposition had filed its court petition to hold the process. Douglas Ngonzora is the Secretary General of Zimbabwe's main opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Change.
There are no servers to store information which is going to come from the exercise. We agreed with ZEC that we will be informed of the procurement of the servers, just like the voter registration kits, through a transparent tender system. Servers have not been advertised for tender and have not been procured. So we cannot proceed with an exercise where we do not know where the information is going to be kept.
The High Court is expected to convene Thursday to hear the opposition petition. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Misha Dubinsky, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the 72nd United Nations General Assembly opens with a theme focusing on people, striving for peace and a decent life for all on a sustainable planet. Host Shaka Sali and his guest will discuss the UNGA's theme and its importance for the people of Africa. On the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today, because they gave me a lot of support morally.
And AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Hello, Africa music fans. We have hours of the music that you love every day. Some things change, some remain the same. From the north to the south and the east to the west, we play only the best. Tune in at 0100, 0200, 1200 and 1300 UTC, GMT, right here on VOA Africa.
VOAAfrica.com.
On voaafrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
voaafrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.